going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, a lot going on here today on The Game. Evan Giddings, Mark Grandy in for Steiny and Guru. We got Wilder and Dibs coming up later today, live from Cache Creek Casino Resort. Looking forward to what's bugging you with those guys. And obviously, the lucky listeners get to play golf with them tomorrow. And Valkyrie's later tonight at 7 o'clock as well.
Big game. Another big name is in town. A lot of big names have been coming to Chase Center recently.
And yet the Valkyries remain the story. It's been impressive.
Caitlin Clark, Sabrina Ionescu, Brianna Stewart, and now Angel Reese, all in town over the last 8 days.
Exactly. And they've continued to sell out all of them.
Yeah.
And they've even picked up a couple of wins.
Yeah, 2-1 in their last three. They lost to the New York Liberty. That's nothing to be upset about. They were the defending WNBA champs, and the Valks were in it to the very end. They lost by 3, so they're doing great. And Angel Reese is a big name and is still a very good player. The Chicago Sky are not nearly as good. So I think the Valks are like 8-point favorites tonight.
Well, and on Wednesday, there was, I think, a report that Joe Lacob spent the first half of the Valkyries game in the war room because while the Warriors didn't have a first-round pick, they might have been trying to acquire one. And he spent the second half of that evening at the Valkyries game. So Joe Lacob truly split on both of his babies right now, the Warriors and the Valkyries. And we'll talk about draft night in a little bit.
Yeah. They're both the most valuable franchises in their respective leagues.
That's true. Yeah, Valkyries already. You know, speaking of the Warriors, I thought that when the Giants traded for Rafael Devers, that was like their Jimmy Butler move. 10 games in, the big difference is, and I realize baseball is a different sport than basketball, Devers has not had the impact that Butler immediately did on winning. And from that standpoint, I can understand, Mark, why after a sweep to the Marlins and not being able to win much since they've acquired him, fans are feeling a little lukewarm now about the deal. And it's sometime, don't get me wrong, but I hear people that say, well, what has he really done? Like, at least Jimmy Butler came here and the Warriors immediately won a bunch of games.
You said it off the top, it's much easier for an individual to impact winning in basketball than in baseball. Like, that's way, 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 way easier. A single player makes a much larger difference in a basketball game than a single player, specifically a position player in a single game of baseball. So I would say that. I also would say Jimmy Butler had some stretches where it wasn't great. And I know that overall, he helped you win games immediately, but it's not as if he was the only reason why they were winning baseball games. Steph Curry was also awesome, and you had a lot of help elsewhere. It's funny that you bring that up, because I was going back and forth during the commercial break with one of our loyal listeners and watchers on YouTube, Dublin Marge, to ask the Giants, or said the Giants need Jimmy freaking Butler. And I responded to Dublin Marge saying, who the hell is Rafi Devers supposed to be? And she responded saying, Rafi freaking Devers. Now they need somebody else on top of that. And then I'm looking at our text line, 888-957-9570.
People aren't happy, Mark.
I was not high on the trade. Devers' advanced metrics are scary. This contract will not age well, and the Giants do not eat contracts. And we've lost three great prospects. You can't tell me a coach couldn't have helped Kyle Harrison develop a slider or sinker to complement his fastball. I am, like, mind blown, Evan, that this is where a lot of Giants minds, fans' minds have gone. Rafi Devers, you said Buster Posey, that's entirely fair. Buster may be a better overall hitter than Rafi Devers. But there is absolutely no doubt, if you go back to the prime of Barry Bonds' career, Rafi Devers is one of like the top five hitters the Giants have had in that time, and we're talking about 20 years worth of teams, and we're going to freak out over less than 2 weeks worth of games about it? I cannot possibly believe that there are people out there that feel that way. I know that he's not Barry Bonds and he's not going to hit 40 home runs. He might not break the 30 home run plateau because it's harder to hit home runs at this ballpark. But there is no doubt Rafi Devers makes this team better. And the trade was an absolute do it 100 times out of 100.
I hear you. Yeah, no, look, the deal is one you have to do. But when it happened, and maybe this is more where the 415 is coming from, like, it wasn't an absolute just surefire plug-and-play guy that's going to change your team. And I think that's what a lot of people feel. Like, when I'm watching this offense right now with Devers, yes, when I, and I've gone to three games during this homestand I went to. It was a lot of fun. Not really a drop, but sure. Pasta's been in more than I have. Drop yourself. So, the lineup on the video board, thank you. The lineup on the video board looks way better. It just does. Devers is in the middle, DHing, or he's hitting second, DHing. It is aesthetically more pleasing to see Rafi Devers come to the plate, but the offense as a whole has performed the same. And a big reason is because Devers, yes, has not found his stride yet, but first 71 games, they were 24th in batting average. With Devers, they've been 21st of the last
better.
10.
That's better.
Slightly better. runs. They were actually 14th. And again, this is all compared to the league. So they were 14th in runs scored. The last 10 games compared to the league, they've been 20th. So they've taken a step back in run scoring. They've been better slightly in terms of walks. Their walk rate has gone from 4th the first 71 games to 2nd. Their last 10 games. Again, whether you want to say they're hitting better, they're scoring more, they're scoring less, it hasn't been glaring. And I think that's what struck me the most about this deal so far is they still kind of have been hitting exactly the same, only Devers is just he's kind of been lipstick in the middle of the order.
I want to hear from more people about this because I'm fascinated the way people are reacting to the deal right now, less than 2 weeks after it happened. 888-957-9570. I'm getting some support on the YouTube chat. Not really much on the text line. The 925 says Devers is more like Jimmy or more like JK than Jimmy. He's one dimensional. There is a lot in that single text that we could talk about, but 888-957-9570. We're less than 2 weeks in. We're 12 days away from the trade that happened. I mean, has your mind completely shifted, or are you preaching a little bit of patience here? Because I feel you, Evan, that the lineup hasn't completely transformed. I think anybody expecting that was expecting too much. I also would say Chapman isn't back yet. Devers has not been in a game with Chapman. And I know Chapman isn't also like an all-star bat. He's maybe the Giants' most valuable player because of what he does on both sides of the field, defensively and offensively. But that's going to change the feeling of this lineup as well, in my opinion. I don't know. Again, it's not going to change the Giants from a pitching-reliant team to a hitting-reliant team, but he's going to give them more opportunities to score more runs. And if I were to look into the numbers, I would imagine we're seeing the Giants have, for the most part, more opportunities in with guys on base and in scoring position, they're just not coming through in those moments. I think over the course of a season and over the course of half of a season, plus like these 12 games for Devers, you will see maybe not a gigantic increase in runs scored, but you will just consistently see the Giants be put in position to score runs more often. And then it's just going to come down to, is someone like a Casey Schmidt or a Mike Yastrzemski or a Jung-Hoo Lee getting a big hit driving in two runs? And maybe that's going to be no, but they will be in a position more consistently to score runs because of how Devers changes the middle of the order.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. And I think that you have to be patient with Devers. My judgment is not about Devers, though. It's about the Giants. Like, and that's how I think we do have to look at this. It's not that Devers is the problem. Their offense is still a problem. And he was not going to, in my mind, come in and all of a sudden transform that offense that had been anemic and inept at points. And again, an offense that at one stretch in the season, for 16 games,
that's rough,
could not score more than four runs. So are they better? Yes. But they're still a you're starting at such a low point that putting Devers in is not going to all of a sudden turn you into the 27 Yankees. It's not. And even Chapman, I would also preach, this may be where we differ a bit. I'm with you on Devers. You got to give him time. He's obviously shown himself to be a great hitter. I am with the text line, though, how the contract ages is a concern of mine, but that's not for June 27, 2025.
Yeah.
Chapman, though, again, it's not going to just expedite this process of you closing the lineup gap with the rest of your division. Devers is a great add. He didn't make your lineup better than the Padres. He didn't make your lineup better than the Diamondbacks. Maybe now with Suarez out, perhaps. And he certainly didn't make your lineup better than the Dodgers. That's not how the Giants are going to win games. He makes you better, but he doesn't change the identity of this team. And that's, to me, what they've lost a little bit, not because of him, just coincidentally, when he got here, is they haven't been playing great defense. They haven't been running the bases very well. They haven't been pitching. All of those little things you talked about in the first hour, to me, are why we're in the situation we are now. They haven't played good baseball, and that's not an indictment on Rafael Devers. That's an indictment on the San Francisco Giants.
But I think the reason why I am optimistic that this is just a down stretch and not who the Giants are is because largely they have done that this year. And we can take the pitching aside, because I think most people would expect the pitching combined starters and pen probably not going to be as good in the second half. I think that's a relatively safe bet, mostly because they've just been so good through the first half for the majority of the season. But I expect them to be better on the base paths. I expect them, at least over the last like 2 weeks, to be better than that defensively. I expect them to make smarter decisions, to play smarter, cleaner, and smoother baseball. And then I expect when Chapman comes back, when Devers continues to get comfortable, Jung-Hoo Lee works through a month-long slump that he's going through right now, I expect them to be better. Now, that's a lot of, I can already hear it. That's an if, and if, and if, and if. I expect all those things to happen. And yes, they are ifs. They're what-ifs at this point. But I expect them to happen. And when you have the team playing better around Devers, Devers' impact will be easier to notice. When you have the support of all three phases of your game going better, pitching-wise, defensively, and offensively, it will be easier to notice Devers' impact. I mean, yeah, we can talk about his slow start as a Giant. Nine games as a Giant, he's hitting .257, on base .350, slugging .486. His OPS is .836. That's not up to his standards, but that immediately puts him in the running for like best hitter on the Giants with an OPS over .800. Like, that's not bad by any stretch.
No, but that's kind of my point. Is like, you're right, that's not bad. But if you look at a lot of offenses on, okay, if you consider the Giants a playoff team.
I do.
I think most people do. Their offense is not good enough to be in the same category as those teams. It's just not.
Do you feel like their pitching is?
It has been, and that's what scares me.
But do you feel like it will be, I guess, is the right question
to ask. I don't know, but if it ain't, then the Giants will not make the playoffs. Like, if the Giants don't pitch better, I don't think they'll make the playoffs because I don't know how much room to improve their offense realistically has. And it's not just all about the ifs you're mentioning. Like, I don't see them compared to the rest of the teams in the NL as being a force or being scary. But again, that's not how coming into the season I thought they were going to be successful. You know, this month of June, and really the last couple of weeks with how their starting pitching has fallen off a little bit and how their bullpen is maybe coming back down to earth, but just not pitching like the best bullpen in baseball, those are the things that to me are really going to hurt the Giants. And it's, again, why I feel like at this point in the season, Devers was a guy you could get, and so you did. Starting pitching is something you need to get. I think they need more of a pitcher than a hitter, even though we've spent a lot of time talking about how bad the offense is. I just feel like that's the way that they're going to win games. So, you know, also it's like, I hear you on the base running and the defense, but is Ramos going to be a better defender in left field? Probably not.
Not noticeably over the course of a year. No, probably not.
Your first baseman is still probably going to struggle defensively no matter who's out there. Unless apparently it's Dom Smith and he's not going to be in the lineup a whole lot. Like, I don't know. They're not a bad team. But I think this conclusion that everyone was jumping to, that Devers was going to cement them as a surefire, no doubt playoff team, I wasn't there yet.
I hear you in terms of the concerns for the pitching, because as we laid out earlier, you have young arms who are approaching innings limits and who haven't been as good of late. You have Verlander, who's the opposite of a young arm, to the point where you maybe expect another IL stint. You have Robbie Ray, who's been amazing but has come down to earth the last couple of starts, and do you expect that to continue? Don't really know what to expect the rest of the year. Let me ask you this, Ev. If the Giants were opening a postseason series today, you know who's pitching game one? That's Logan Webb. You feel pretty good about still throwing Robbie Ray out for game two. Who's starting game three of a Giants postseason series?
It's Verlander. Yeah.
Is that more about Verlander or more about your lack of faith in the other two options?
No, it's because he's pitched in countless postseason games and is a World Series champion.
So more about Verlander. That's fair.
Yeah, but it's about his past. It's not about his present. Like,
he hasn't been bad this year.
He ain't been very good.
I think the concern over Verlander has been overblown, in my opinion, this year. I think he's been fine. Came off the IL, a month-long IL stint. Maybe he should have taken a rehab stint in Sacramento. He did not do that. Two starts off of a month on the IL hasn't been great. But this is his first two starts back. And interrupted by the birth of his child. Like, I think he'll be fine.
What does fine look like?
In May, he had a what?
I think a 3-8.
3-8 in May. Before he went on the IL, four of his six previous starts were six or more innings and two or fewer runs allowed. Not saying it's going to be that every single time, but like, he had a stretch where he was pretty damn good. And recently it has not been good, but it's off of an IL stint. I think he will be a serviceable, like, third or fourth pitcher for the Giants. As long as he's healthy, but that is the big if he's healthy.
Yeah, and I guess it's either going to be an injury or maybe him falling off a little bit. You know, ideally, a pitcher like Verlander should get better the further into the season you go. But, again, I think it's more about what he's done than what he's currently doing. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, Laughing Monk Righteously Brewed in San Francisco. Well, I'll throw it back at you then.
Okay.
Why should Verlander get the ball in a Game 3 scenario?
I think it's a big part of it is what you say. He has been through countless of those situations before in the playoffs, one of the most successful postseason pitchers in this era. And then also it's, I don't feel great about a couple of youngsters in Hayden Birdsong and Landon Roop, who are relatively new to this level of professional baseball and have never pitched in the playoffs before.
So it's a process of elimination.
Somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know, again, like, getting rid of Harrison and Hicks, I understand it, but you leave yourself a little vulnerable for the remainder of this season.
I wouldn't feel better with with Harrison, though. Like, I wouldn't start Harrison over Verlander in a postseason series.
No. That's not what I'm saying. But again, you have to get to the playoffs first. And to me, that's my bigger concern with the Giants. Like, in the playoffs, you could ride two guys, you know, if you really want to. Like, you don't have to have a third starter. I know the Giants have won World Series primarily with three dudes in varying orders. But you can ride two horses the rest of the way, especially if your bullpen is as dominant as the Giants have been. My concern is about getting there. And again, the last week and a half, these last 2 weeks, it feels like they're having trouble every third or fourth day. And who knows, maybe Carson Seymour is able to help take a little bit of the load off. But to me, it's like, you know, I think they're in kind of a delicate position right now. They're not in a bad spot. I think they're well within striking distance, but reinforcements have to be imminent if this team is going to survive the second half.
Okay, let me ask you this then. If you feel like getting starting pitching help one way or another is the best way to improve their postseason chances, getting to the postseason, mm-hmm. and also potentially winning a postseason series, who are you feeling comfortable trading away to make that happen? Because starting pitching is never cheap at the trade deadline.
I think you
already traded away a starting pitcher.
I think it kind of is. Like, I'm not talking, I mean, if you could get Alcantara, that's great. That might be more costly. But I'm talking about, like, I'm talking about getting an Andrew Heaney. Like, I'm talking about getting a fourth or fifth guy that means that when Roop is eventually done or you don't really trust Birdsong a whole lot, you feel okay in third or fourth game of a series.
Someone to give up, like, four runs over six innings. Eat six innings and just keep us somewhat in it.
Someone to eat innings. Again, I know it's a little complicated, but the reason why I think their bullpen was as dominant as it was for the first 71 games is because they didn't have to pitch very much. They didn't have to throw that many innings. Like, the starting pitching ERA was at or a little bit above league average the first 71 games of the season, but they ate the seventh most innings. They averaged about six per start. The last 10 games, they've averaged around or less than five innings per start. They're starting pitching. That's, I know, one inning, but that's a big difference over the course of a week or two. Yeah. And you're putting guys in positions where they're probably not in great positions. Like yesterday, Bivens, that was the second time throwing in the series. Spencer Bivens should not be throwing two times in a series if you're looking to win that series. And it's not because he's a bad pitcher. It's because he's a middle relief guy. He shouldn't be throwing a lot.
Yeah, he generally pitches when it's the fourth or fifth inning, and you're either up or down by six runs.
Or if you're down in a game, like in game one of the series, where you threw him in late.
Yeah, yeah. Your point about, like, starting pitching, eating enough innings to keep the bullpen fresh, it's what did the Giants in last year. Because, I mean, they had how many starting pitchers last year? 2.5? So their bullpen had bullpen games often throughout the entire season. It's kind of what the Dodgers are going through this year because of all their starting pitchers that are on the IL. They've had like 2.5 starters this season as well. You have Kershaw, who's come back of late. You have Yamamoto, who's made, I think, every single start, every single turn through the rotation. You have Dustin May. Beyond that, you have like nobody who's made any kind of start, and you're going to get Blake Snell back at some point. I don't know what the timeline is on someone like Glasnow or some of their other guys, but they're going to only get healthier. And part of the reason why the Dodgers haven't been as dominant as maybe they've been in the past is not because somehow they're a worse baseball team. It's because there's a very wide-ranging effect when you don't have enough quality starting pitchers, because then your bullpen gets taxed and overworked. The Dodgers are looking at the opposite effect for them, because when they get healthy, their bullpen will become more well-rested and they'll be more prepared to help them in September. The Giants are looking at maybe if Birdsong and Roop hit innings limits and they can't go anymore, they're looking at the exact opposite problem, where then the bullpen has to carry so much more of the burden, which makes them less reliable, you would imagine, in August and September.
Yeah, and it's not fair to compare their offenses, but like I asked you today to look at the first round of All-Star finalists.
Oh, God.
And shocker, there's not a Giant among them, but
how many Dodgers are among them?
At every single position, and I know it's fan voting, like Max Muncy is not the second best third baseman in the NL this year. Tommy Edman's not been the second best second baseman. Teo Hernandez, maybe Andy Pajes might not have been the top five outfielders, but at every single position, they have a finalist. Will Smith for catcher, Edmund for second base, Betts for shortstop, Muncy at third, Freeman at first base, Hernandez and Pajes in the outfield. Like, that's why they can sustain not having pitching.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to compare the two lineups. But again, that's why I think that the Giants are in a bit of a delicate spot, because if their pitching doesn't perform, they don't have anything close to that kind of offense to rely on.
Yeah. By the way, real quick, I know we got to hit a break. Thank you to T-Dog on the text line, 888-957-9570. The Red Sox, in their last five games without Devers, they're 0-5, and they've scored just 16 runs in those five games. So Devers' impact is being felt. His absence is being felt in Boston. Be happy you got Devers, Giants fans. That's all I'm trying to say, all right? He'll be fine.
Yeah, against the Angels, but nevertheless, not exactly. Although, Angels...
Got swept.
Angels quietly been playing pretty well.
Got swept.
They have Lamont Wade Jr. now, guys.
Oh, is he tearing the cover off the ball?
No.
Shocker.
Nope.
Marlins also been playing pretty well, too. 1-9-13. All right, I did want to switch up on the other side. I want to get into some hoop. The Warriors had a couple picks last night we're going to tell you about. Also, I think the more interesting part was what Mike Dunleavy Jr. said, not just about the picks, but about kind of where the Warriors are at this summer right now. So we'll examine that on the other side. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings, Mark Randy in for Matt Stein. That's Gerald the Guru Johnson. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Yay!
All right, he'll be back on Tuesday. Evan Giddings, Mark Grandy with you here on a Friday. Take you up until Cache Creek Casino Resort. That's where Willard and Dibs are. And looking forward to that. Valkyries later tonight at 7 o'clock, taking on the sky. I thought we'd switch gears for a little bit here. The news of the day, unfortunately, in the Bay Area, Grandy, at least in the sports scene, is D'Amador Lenore, who was arrested last night in Los Angeles, was involved in a situation where LAPD saw his friend's car, double parked, checked it out, noticed a weapon, and it was not Lenore's. But in the process, his friend threw him the keys. Cops obviously tried to get the keys. Lenore sounded like he was playing keep away, basically, and was arrested on charge of obstruction of justice. He was released earlier this morning. The Niners have not released a statement. But I got to ask, in an offseason that's been pretty drama-free for the Niners, does this mar it in any way?
I don't think so. It is definitely not a good thing. Like, even something like this could be a distraction, and I don't think it's going to turn into anything more than this. Now, the Niners haven't released a statement. D'Amador Lenore has not released a statement. It seems to me that this isn't going to really amount to anything. It seems there's nothing wrong. You can own a firearm in the state of California, right? Like, and it wasn't even his gun in the first place. The only reason why law enforcement officials approached the vehicle was because it was double parked, and that might be the only thing. In addition to maybe not immediately handing the keys over, that might be the only thing that D'Amador Lenore and his friend are guilty of, is double parking. This doesn't seem like a big deal, but it does really, like, I don't know, offer a contrast to what the rest of the Niners offseason has been, because there's been a little bit of Ayuk drama, right? Like, Brandon, why are you posting on social media? What does this even mean, first of all? Why are you doing it, second of all? But even that kind of pales in comparison to a potential law enforcement issue. And I really don't think D'Amador really did anything wrong at all. So I don't want to overreact. But when you take into account, Evan, what everything else has been this offseason, which has been, you know, sunshine and roses and everything is looking and feeling and smelling great. Like, this is a pretty big contrast to what the rest of the offseason has been. But I don't think it's going to ultimately prove to be that big of a deal.
Well, I certainly hope not. And we don't know what's going to happen. It sounded like the biggest issue was with his friend.
It does seem
Marcus
like.
Cunningham?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
So that was according to TMZ. But I will say, you are who you keep. And for Lenore to be in this situation, it's not a good thing. Whether or not he... And hopefully he doesn't have to miss any time. Hopefully it's resolved by the end of the day. But You know what actually hit me about the story is that they were double parked in LA. Like, you can't double park anywhere in Los Angeles, or it creates gridlock. And so the fact that they were doing that, or Cunningham was, it's like, and there was a gun in the car. Like, the one, I don't know, Mark.
Yeah, that's
like,
just not smart. Yeah.
You know, I usually keep my gun in the glove compartment when I'm, no, I'm just kidding. But it's like, what are we doing if you're Cunningham? Why are you double parking in a major city like Los Angeles? I know people do it in SF all the time, but it's, I think it's a little more understood here. In LA, like, you're going to draw attention yourself. And to me, it's more about, you know, the idiocy of his friend than D'Amador Lenore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this isn't like, I don't know, also that crazy in terms of like NFL individual player offseason stuff. Like, this and things 100 times worse than this happen or are done by NFL players. Like, in not to excuse any illegal or illicit activity, and not that D'Amador Lenore really did anything wrong here, potentially. We don't know the full story and all the details, but like, the 49ers have gone through a whole lot worse than this too, and other teams have gone through way worse than this as well. But when you have someone like Kyle Shanahan talking about how refreshing this offseason has been, and how compared to last year when he had to beg people to show up to offseason programs and to workouts, and this year he didn't have to do any of that, and they got the contracts done with Purdy, and Kittle got extended, and Fred Warner got extended, and you know, even Trent showing up to offseason programs, and McCaffrey's healthy, and he's looking good on the sidelines when he's warming up and everything. Everything is going smoothly. Everything. Maybe other than some cryptic Ayuk drama, and then this is dropped on them. I guarantee you, when Kyle Shanahan found out, I don't know exactly how he found out, probably not on social media like we did. They knew ahead of time. He was not happy. I'll put it that way. But it's not as if this is a situation where you're like, oh my God, now we're going to have to cut D'Amador Lenore. Like, it's nowhere near that level of thing.
No, but it is a distraction. And I think the Niners have prioritized trying to remove those compared to last offseason. You know, it's interesting because things happen in a hurry real quick. I think Lenore probably is going to regret trying to play keep away with the keys from the cops. But I have seen D'Amador Lenore as a pretty upstanding citizen, as I would even venture to say a future captain on this team. And maybe that's what I guess I notice a little bit more about it. It's in look, Lenore is really young. He obviously just signed his first big contract. He's in a stage in his life where he's a lot more famous now. And with that fame comes a lot more eyes. And unfortunately today or last night from LAPD, but it doesn't change the way that I look at D'Amador Lenore. Unless there's another detail about this report that's being, you know, sorted through right now.
No, I'm with you. And you said something, you kind of view him as a future captain. I forget exactly at what point it was. I think it was while Mooney Ward was out dealing with an injury and some of the personal tragedy that he went through last year. And that's when you saw Lenore really step up, and I think it's what made the Niners comfortable giving him the big contract that they did last regular season. I think at that point I said, I think this dude's going to be a captain for the Niners next year, as in this coming season. I think that's how respected he is in that locker room and how good of a player he is. Like, if they lose Lenore for whatever reason, whether it is related to this and something else comes out about this story that we do not yet know, or if it's injury-related or for whatever reason, if he misses time this next year, like, my confidence in the Niners' ability to make the postseason takes a major dip. Like, Lenore is one of the, I would say, he's probably their third most important player on defense, behind
Warner and Bosa.
And then it's D'Amador Lenore. Like, he is incredibly valuable to this team. He's their number one corner. And I know we brought this up earlier, and there was a text disagreeing with me saying he's a top 10 or top 15 cornerback in the league, saying, well, he's just a slot, he's just a nickel corner. He's maybe the best nickel corner in the league, and he's probably going to be asked to play more outside this year. He is a really, really, really good player. If they, for whatever reason, were to be without him for an extended period, this defense drops from, like, a potential, in my mind, of being you know, average to top 10 defense to being like below average. I don't know how they can make up for losing their top corner when they don't really have anyone that has done anything in the league besides Renardo Green, who even for him is entering his second year in the game. Like, he is really, really, really important. So the only reason that this is a big deal to me is just that he is one of their more important players. Not that this is a big issue, but if anything were to happen to him, the Niners suffer greatly.
I think when you say that, it also just hits me over the head, like how many of those players they have. And not necessarily in a good way. Like, if Trent Williams goes down, you look at their offensive line completely differently.
Mm.
If Bosa gets hurt, you look at their D-line differently. Warner the same. You could go to McCaffrey. I think Williams and McCaffrey are probably the two most fragile pieces just due to their age and their recent injury history. But you're right. Like, if they have to miss, if Lenore misses time for whatever reason, this or some future injury, like, they're kind of screwed. That is one of the reasons why I hear people who aren't necessarily all in on next season. And I don't mean all in like winning a Super Bowl, just they're waiting and seeing. I mean, I think even Lenore is a player you kind of need to wait and see on a little bit just because he's never had to be the number one. Now, for a time he did because of Mooney Ward's tragedy off the field. But stepping into this season, he is now the number one outside cornerback. And he's never had that role before. So we don't know how he's going to perform. I don't look at this offseason issue as being something that'll impact him on the field. But it's not a good thing to have associated with, you know, like your first offseason as the man. I'll say that.
It's not a good thing. Like, there's no possible way you could twist this into a good thing. I don't think it's a major bad thing, but it is definitely way more bad than good. Like, I guarantee you, when John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan found out, it was, are you kidding me? Like, come on.
Well, it's a mistake. And it's a mistake that for a player that's paid like D'Amador Lenore is, it can't happen. I'm not saying that these things don't, but when that news comes down, it's like, yeah, that's the number one news because he's the highest paid corner on the 49ers.
Yeah, and I don't mean this like, the Niners are this holier-than-thou organization, but it does also seem to me, ever since what happened with Reuben Foster, which was the very beginning of the Shanahan and Lynch era, right? Reuben Foster was a first-round pick in the Lynch-Shanahan first-ever draft, and then he had countless off-the-field issues, and that was a failed pick from the jump. Ever since then, it seems like Shanahan and the 49ers have really, really taken seriously, like, high character, no tolerance for off-field issues, and that sort of thing. Like, there are other NFL teams who tend to, it seems like they are willing to put up with more than maybe the 49ers, and maybe I'm just misremembering. If we could probably, like, go through and look, like, number of arrests for NFL teams over the last decade. Like, there are stats to keep track of that stuff. It does feel like, again, maybe this is the Niners feeling just like holier than thou, and that's not always necessarily a good thing. But it does feel like they tend to have a short leash for this kind of stuff.
I mean, I would say they signed DeMarcus Robinson, who's going to be suspended probably for 3 games because of a DUI.
Yeah.
But
good point.
You know, but largely, I do agree with you. I think that they value culture. I think they value high character players. But at the end of the day, it's really just about what you can give them on the field. And that's why I don't think the Niners are any worse or better than most, you know, kind of upstanding organizations. But you know, this is something that it's just like, why now? Like, why in the middle of the summer when things have gone so well? You could say Ayuk's been a distraction. Compared to last year, he hasn't.
Not even close.
Maybe he's the biggest one and he stands out like a sore thumb because there's been literally crickets. Like, you got the Brock Purdy deal done as early as you could. It looks like George Kittle's going to get an extension. Or George Kittle.
He did.
He did get an extension. Yeah. Pardon me. Fred Warner did get an extension. You've gotten all of your drama potential issues out of the way. And then we wake up this morning and we see D'Amador Lenore got arrested in L.A. And it's like, why? I don't know. It's unfortunate. But I have to say, before this happened, it felt like a complete 180 from last summer. what the Niners have done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, there is a very, like, I think most people would think Niners were in a better position in terms of the talent they had on their roster last year, going into last year, a year ago at this point. Probably people felt better about the team a year ago than they do now. Not like just the drama of the offseason, but just expectations for the year.
Do you think that's the root of it? The root of what? Like, a feeling better about it going into the season. Yes, everyone feels confident and strong about their football team, but, like, do you think that the hope comes from, well, we haven't had anything weird happen this offseason?
I think that's the main, that's where I come from. That's how my confidence comes from. This has been a smoother, cleaner offseason. Got rid of, quote unquote, your problems from last year, right? You have a lot of your issues that are no longer on the roster. You're hoping that your draft picks come through, and then you're looking at a younger, more dynamic team. But a year ago, while all these problems were happening, Evan, while Ayuk was holding out and not willing to show up and not practicing and all of that, and you had the impending Brock Purdy deal hanging over everybody's head as recently as just last year, that was also a team that was coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, and most people felt like they still had the most talented roster in the NFL. So at that point, there's still a lot of confidence in the ability to brush off all their offseason drama and actually go and perform and win games. They didn't, and a lot of it was because of injuries. Then you had Debo drama, right? And Ayuk tears up his knee, and then suddenly the team is 6-11. And now they come into this season, and while I think most people would say there's less talent on the team now, the smoothness of the offseason is what is feeding into confidence. At least I can speak for myself in that regard. So despite less talent probably overall, I feel better about the Niners now than I did last year because of the lack of all these distractions.
Well, and I got to tell you what, I was feeling great about D'Amador Lenore 2 weeks ago when he came on with Woden Diggs.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to do more interviews like that, not because of today, but because he is an emerging captain.
He's
an
dude.
Emerging leader yeah. on this team. And here's what he had to say about the pressures that come with the crown.
I mean, I feel like it's just an even bigger chip, you know, within just being paid so much money. I feel like it's kind of like you got to prove yourself. Like, you still have to prove yourself. You got to prove why you're worth that much. So I feel like it's still like kind of a chip on my shoulder.
That's the opposite of the news we got today. It just is. And I realize that, fortunately, nobody got hurt. He wasn't charged with enough to keep him for longer than tonight. It doesn't feel like it's going to be something that lingers. But again, those comments a couple of weeks ago are directly against the report that we saw today.
Yeah, the contract that he was referencing there in that cut, 5 years, $88.9 million contract. And that's a lot of money. And for a guy who was a fifth-round pick, he, I'm sure, was confident in his ability to prove himself and eventually earn a deal like that. But the percentage of fifth-round picks that make almost $89 million over the course of their entire career is exceedingly low. And I think he continued during that same interview with Willard and Dibbs talking about how the pressure, and that was part of it, pressure to continue to earn his keep in this league. And he essentially said, I've been doubted in every step of my career. I was a fifth-round pick, and people didn't even necessarily expect me to make the team as a rookie. It seemed like he has a good head on his shoulders in the sense that he knows, like, how fickle this business is, and, like, it could be taken away from you at any moment. And what you just heard him say right there was you got to earn it, like, every day, and, like, that's just you got to continue to prove while you're worth that money. And to his credit, he said all the right things a couple of weeks ago. And again, I don't want to overreact to this, but it is not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination. And when you have a guy who is your number one corner and making $88.9 million over the course of 5 years, a contract that was signed less than a year ago, that's going to raise some red flags.
Well, that's what is disappointing to me is he doesn't have a track record of acting
no,
like this.
No, none at all.
Lenore's been a perfect teammate. He's been one of those culture guys that the Niners, I think, really pride themselves on, not just drafting and you know, capturing, but developing, helping them become future 49ers. Fred Warner is probably the poster child for that, because he is, to me, like the most presidential person, maybe in all of the NFL, but certainly on the Niners. Lenore, what happened last night and today, his fault or not, flies directly in the face of that. And that's just the reality of it. So that's what's disappointing for me, is he hasn't had a track record of these transgressions. And so, and I'm not saying he's even going to have a future history of it. But when you sign a deal for as large as Lenore did, and you set yourself to become a captain of the future for this football team, these kinds of things can happen. And I honestly think that's the conversation that probably is at some point going to go down with, yeah, with Lynch and Shanahan. It's not like we look at you any different and you're a horrible person now and you're a problem child. We just have to, we have to emphasize that these sort of off-the-field things, they can't happen if you're going to be a captain of this football team.
Yeah, there's like a couple of, I think, competing like thoughts here, and one of them is what we just saw on the YouTube chat. Summit Building wrote this, talent over tolerance, how much can you tolerate for a talented guy? And that is always a conversation that not just NFL teams, but any, I guess it's not even just in sports, it's in any walk of life, it's in any profession.
Yeah.
But the way we think about it probably most often is in the sport world, is obviously if you're the most talented dude in the world at whatever it is that you do, your employer is more likely going to be willing to put up with other stuff, right? Like, if you're this good, you can be a distraction elsewhere and get away with it at times. So that is always one part of it. If you're really good, and Diomedale Lenore is really good, you can get away with more than someone who's not as good. That's generally the way it works. But the other half of this, and I think this is the way the Niners feel specifically, and again, this goes back to, I think, how they were burned by Reuben Foster, and you go back to, you know, Alden Smith in the Harbaugh days. It's a similar thing there. When you sign a contract like that, and when you are a potential captain, like he very well could be a captain of this team this year, like, they will vote at some point during training camp, and he could be voted a captain, and I would not be shocked if he is. When you are a player like that and you have a contract like he has, the expectations for you rise, like gigantically rise. When you are paid to be one of the best players on your team, that is not just your performance on the field. You are held to a higher standard than anybody else on your team because the team is investing that much money in you. And again, I don't want to overreact to what this is, because I really don't think it is a big deal, but it becomes a bigger deal when it is a big player that it happens to. And that's what Diomedale Lenore is now. Whether or not everyone around the league feels that way, whether or not other fan bases know who Diomedale Lenore is, the Niners feel that way in that locker room. So they hold those guys to a higher standard because of what they expect out of that guy. And that's why the Niners will be treating this like a pretty big deal, because it is a big deal to a guy they're paying $88 million to.
Well, and the reason why it is a story is because, and it's a credit to the Niners, there's been no stories this offseason.
Like, this would have been swept under the rug last year.
Yeah.
Possibly.
No, I mean, seriously, like, in comparison to contract negotiations and guys fighting for money, we would have been like, all right, well, you know, Demo's just another part of the offseason from hell. Like, yeah. or Pearsall getting shot, or like, it just would have been a part of all the things that went wrong last year for the Niners. And I don't think it's like the tip of the iceberg, but that's why it is a story in Bay Area sports today. It's a compliment to the Niners, and it's also something that has me, I don't know, I guess feeling some type of way about their state going into next season. But there's also another thing that Lenore said with Wilder and Dibbs that I want to hit on, because he had a particular quote that I thought was really illuminating about the person, like the character of him. And I want to explore that a little bit on the other side. We obviously have basketball we got to get to, and the Warriors picks that were introduced last night, second night of the NBA draft. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a little bit. All brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Evan Giddings, Mark Grandy, and for Matt Steinmetz alongside with Daryl the Guru Johnson, obviously. That segment sponsored by Ceremony Ford. We'll be back after this.
going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Audacy podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.